Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Short definition of woke is bigoted against straights, racist against whites, and sexist against males. And this is a civil rights podcast, fighting against all forms of discrimination against all types of people. Let's get into it. Sports Illustrated magazine just laid off almost all their workers. Looks like they're going away. It was just a couple years ago that they put a trans woman on the cover of their swimsuit issue. So they've gone broke, and they did get woke. Were those two related, or bad timing? We don't know. And the crime du jour on the nightly news is airplane mishaps. It's not exactly a crime, but it's similar. There was some cargo plane that left Miami airport and was like flames across the sky the other day. They turned around and landed and it was okay. But on Twitter, airplane mishaps has become associated with DEI. I mean, the airlines never tell us, oh yeah, that one was caused by a diversity hire. But I don't think normies are seeing airplane mishaps and going, oh, DEI must be stopped. But it's probably getting through to, you know, 0.1% of America, which is a start. And there was a strange segment on NBC Nightly News this week. They're frequently looking for a new angle to talk about abortion rights. And someone did a poll saying that high school girls going off to college are possibly choosing which university they go to based on whether or not the state still has abortion rights. And it's a video medium, so they went and found such a high school girl and interviewed her sitting next to her mom. And she was like, yeah, I got accepted to the University of Alabama, but I'm not going there because you can't get an abortion in Alabama. And I'm just looking at her mom sitting there going like, what do you think of that about that, mom? It sounds like your daughter's off to, I don't know, put a bun in the oven and then pull it back out. I think it was the media's chance to sexualize a high school girl. They never pass one of those up. So Trump won the Iowa caucuses. It was something like 50-20-20, Trump, DeSantis, Haley. Vivek got 8 and he dropped out and endorsed Trump. I was watching the Forbes magazine YouTube channel where they broke down how rich Vivek is. He is super damn rich. He has $600 million of stock in a biotech medical company that he started. And his, you know, the story that he tells, I don't know exactly how true it is that the company around him got woke, and that was why he had to leave and became a politician. So he can't go back. But the stock price of the company is doing great. And then he has, I think maybe $300 million of stock in the Strive, I don't know, I think it's an anti-woke mutual fund, which has like $1 billion of assets under management, I think they call it. So 300 sounds high. Anyways, he's got many millions from that one. And I think more people are putting their money into that as he runs for president, or ran. So he's kind of talking his book when he's running for president. Just like everyone is talking their book. That's a good phrase. Talking your book, that means, you know, is what you're saying what you truly believe? Well, it's definitely what helps you out financially. It may or may not be what you truly believe. And if you just notice, everyone is talking their book, and you can never tell if it's what they really believe. And then what was interesting in Iowa was, you know, so Trump got 50%. Oh, that means half of Iowan Republicans don't want him. Well, or the people who voted for DeSantis and Vivek are also Trump supporters, so 80% of them want him. And I'm getting this from Sarah Isker on Left, Right, and Center podcast if you want a more detailed version. But basically, the Iowa Republicans were split by education level. If you had a, you know, if you're highly educated, that was the 20% that voted for Nikki Haley, and then 80% for Trump or Trump Lite or Trump Alternative or New Trump. And so that's interesting because you hear about the education split with Democrats and Republicans, where highly educated people switch from Republican to Democrat. I don't know. Certainly in 2016 and since. And then blue-collar workers, especially in the Midwest and Pennsylvania, they switched over to Republican. But it makes sense, but I hadn't actually heard. Yeah, it's splitting the Republican Party. What hasn't happened yet, and we're waiting to see what shoe drops, is does it split the Democratic Party, the non-white part? It seems like it's splitting Hispanics. If it ever splits the black vote, it's gonna shake up, you know, all of politics. It's gonna shake up the parties. I mean, Democrats are basically gonna be the pro-war, pro-rich party. They already are. I mean, they are in their policies, but they're not in the American perception of the party. So that's what I'm waiting to see. And that's also why it's so important that the mainstream media gets people to think that Trump is the racist and Republicans are the racists, because that's how you keep the blacks from voting for him. Because otherwise, by education level, which is the thing that's determining everyone's vote, you know, it would determine the black vote too. And, you know, I guess that's whatever. If you think blacks should vote Republican, then this is what you get for slavery. But the other things that are splitting the electorate is abortion and threats to democracy. And what we don't know is voter turnout. It seems like Trump voters are pretty stoked on Trump, and so they'll probably turn out to vote. I mean, especially, you know, all these court cases make people who liked Trump already, you know, is it cold? Is it snowing or whatever? Like, they're going to get out. They're going to get in their car. They're going to warm it up in the cold morning to go to vote. And we don't know if Republicans, I think last election, Republican politicians said, don't vote by mail. That's, you know, you're going to get your votes stolen. And I think now they're like, you know, maybe you should vote by mail in case it's really cold that day. I mean, they haven't started saying that. We're getting mixed messages on that vote by mail from Trump. And then Joe Biden voters are not excited about voting for him, but maybe they're fired up because Trump is a threat to democracy, or they're fired up because of pro-abortion rights. So we're waiting to see on that. Basically, abortion is a motivator. But, you know, 2 years later, how much of a motivator is it? And then threats to democracy, 4 years later, how much is that a motivator? And can that be turned on its head? I mean, in my opinion, it's really the deep state that is the, you know, the administrative state, the federal government that doesn't change when the elected officials don't change, whatever you want to call it. They're the threat to democracy, and they currently are aligned with the Democrats, so that's why the Democrats are the threat to democracy. But, you know, we'll see what the electorate thinks. Here's a clip from NPR talking about it.
Well, I want to finish with asking you both about this. I mean, Sarah, you brought up what both sides see as the risk to democracy, and that more people are saying it's actually Democrats. Jonathan Chait in New York Magazine was writing about just the fatigue of this storyline that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. He writes that this is a very common phase of any anti-authoritarian political movement, that it lasts for a while and you get really freaked out, but then the quote authoritarian can just keep pounding this message of like, I am fighting for you, this is the biggest moment in the history of our country, and that the people who are fighting for the world order, it's like you're just, it's like a more boring argument. Like, let's just stay with the status quo of our politics as the way they always have been in a democracy, and that just loses steam. And I wonder just...
Let's play Sarah's reply to that NPR clip I did previously. Now, I should say, I don't know about the 2008 financial crisis being the impetus. I think it might be immigration, or who even knows. And is Donald Trump the wolf? So far, everything indicates that he is not the wolf. I mean, anyone could turn out to be a wolf later. But anyways, she's a little spit firecracker. I love her. Firecracker? Spitfire? Firecracker who makes me drool?
I have a slightly different take, because you need to explain why it's happening worldwide. You need to explain why the parties are realigning such that the Republican Party is getting much more racially diverse. Again, it's realigning around education. But at the same time, that Democratic coalition around race and identity politics is falling apart. And it's because people don't think that the current status quo, the one that, you know, you're talking about trying to protect, David, they don't think it's worked. I think that that's due to the 2008 financial crash, and that's why we're seeing this worldwide trend of wanting to tear down institutions, why populism is becoming popular. And so you've got to kind of meet people where they are about why the institutions aren't working before you're like, oh, they just want to tear down democracy. No, they want the democracy that they felt like they were promised, and that 2008 proved to them that, in fact, it was all rigged the whole time. It's just that the people now who were rigging it then are now the ones saying, oh, no, please don't change the way this is running that's worked for us and not for you. You know, I went through this last time, but part of the problem is this boy cries wolf issue on the left, where they said Dewey was a fascist and Hitler-esque, Reagan was, Bush was, Romney was racist. And the problem is, of course, and this isn't lost on me, in the story of the boy who cries wolf, eventually there is a wolf also. And so the question is, have they spent all their capital in the 80 years before this attacking Republicans with the same sort of anti-democracy, fascist, racist line, and now is this the wolf, or...
And now you've wasted the argument, and now when you actually really needed it.
That's right. That's what the boy who cries wolf is actually about. We always use it as, you know, without mentioning that eventually there is a wolf.
So to NPR, it is self-evident that Trump is the evil threat to democracy and that they're on the side of light. So, you know, they got to come up with reasons to rationalize why your average Joe wouldn't agree with that position. And it'll probably take for every generation through Generation Alpha to get old and die off. And then the one after that might have a different opinion, because they're not going to think they're in the wrong ever. I mean, no one does. Or maybe AI something something. And there's a thing where people have been talking their book, but they don't realize that's all they're doing. So for a long time, you hear people saying, what you need to do is attack Trump, you know, the other Republican nominees. Like, people are saying Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, they should attack Trump right now. That's the way to win. How can you win? How can you beat Trump if you don't attack him and go at him and say, you're a criminal and whatever. You're a threat to democracy. You're a criminal. And there's been whole podcasts that I used to love that I had to drop because it's just like, you know, they're saying DeSantis needs to build his thing around attacking Trump. That's how he'll win. But I think we can see now. So Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, if you even heard of them, those were the ones who attacked Trump. And they were the ones who Republicans disliked the most. And DeSantis, Haley, and Ramaswamy, they didn't win. I don't think they ever had a chance to win, or at least attacking Trump wasn't going to be their chance. Like, hey, voters, you were total fools. You voters were just idiots. God, I've never seen so many dumb people voting for Trump in 2016 and 2020. Now vote for me, you fucking idiots. I want to be the front runner in 2028, and I want Trump to choose me for VP or put me in his cabinet. But like, especially Democrats, but also never Trumpers. They're like, yeah, you need to attack Trump. I mean, from Democrats, they're talking their book. They're basically like, I want all the Republican nominees to be suicide bombers and go at Trump. And if they both blow up, beautiful. I mean, if they would say that, then I could give them some credit. But, you know, they obviously don't put it that way. You know, they want them both destroyed. They want a Democrat to win. And then the never Trumpers have gotten into that too. They're like, I don't know, they hate Trump so much that they're willing to let any Republican nominee blow themselves up in the mission. I don't know. After Trump wins in New Hampshire and then basically the whole thing is over and we're not talking about it anymore, I'm going to go back and re-listen to some podcasts that I dropped because of those stupid takes and see if they're going back to being smart again. Oh, and I realize why Trump is possibly going to pick Tim Scott as his VP. It's the same reason he picked Indiana Governor Mike Pence the first time around. I mean, no one likes Mike Pence. You know, not even talking about January 6th stuff. People didn't like him before then. But evangelical Christian voters were not entirely sure about Trump and his commitment to basically anti-abortion rights. And Mike Pence was known to be very religious. Like, he has a rule he won't go into. He won't be alone in a room with a woman unless his, well, period, unless it's his wife. And I think other strange stuff. Or maybe he's just a crazy horn dog and he knows himself. But Trump wants to win, and what could help him win is the black vote. And so I was looking at a map of the six swing states, and four out of the six, the black vote would help him a ton. Two of them, a Hispanic vote would help him. That's Nevada and Arizona. Hispanics would help him. I don't even know who he would pick. You know, some up-and-coming Hispanic Republican star. I don't think there is one. But Georgia and North Carolina are swing states. They have a lot of black people. You know, just 1 or 2 more percent would possibly put Trump over the top. And Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania also have a decent chunk of African Americans. And Tim Scott is a real African American. His ancestors were slaves in America, unlike Kamala Harris, who's mostly an Indian. And the other people likely to be chosen for vice president are white women. And I think, I mean, Trump has a problem with white women. They don't like him. I'm not sure choosing one as a VP makes a big difference. I think, you know, a black VP, percentage-wise, will get you the black vote probably the most. And then a woman will get you the female vote a little bit. And then, like, you know, choosing a white male probably doesn't change anything. Choosing Vivek might drive people away. But the difference between 2016 and 2020 was white men voted for Trump less. But, like I say, I don't think there's a VP choice to fix that. Just Trump either does it himself or he doesn't. If you want to hear good news about Trump crushing it in his trials, listen to NPR's Trump's Trials podcast on Saturday. So one of the four cases against Trump is Georgia election interference, RICO, something, something. And the prosecutor is Fani Willis, I think a diversity female hire. And it's coming out that she was the other woman with a guy she hired to help with the case against Trump. And that guy got $650,000. And they've been taking flights together. And now that guy's in a messy divorce. So it's not anything that Trump did, but just he may get super lucky and the prosecutor may blow the whole thing up with her misconduct. And then this is the first I've heard about it, but Trump's lawyers are trying to get information about the intelligence agencies in the Mar-a-Lago top secret documents case. Now, there's a thing called discovery where you can get like internal emails from, you know, maybe a corporation that you're suing, or sometimes when they sue you, you can do discovery back to them. And I don't think you can normally do discovery to like the FBI when the FBI is trying to take you down. And I don't even know if it's discovery that Trump's trying to do or what, but he's trying to shine a spotlight on the intelligence agencies somehow. And his situation is obviously, you know, you're not just a normal bank robber. The FBI and the CIA have been doing stuff on and off to Trump for 7 years. So I don't know anything that's going on, but I could imagine it's like, hey, you know, we need, oh, that's right. And the judge is the one judge that doesn't have Trump derangement syndrome, I think. The Georgia case, I don't think, has a judge yet. Or yeah, they do. I don't know what's going on with that one. But anyways, the document judge has been favorable to Trump. And I could see, it's a little weird, like, you know, the FBI had an investigation of Trump. And then they stopped it. And then they started another investigation. And then they ended that one. Then they started a third one. And then they, you know, ended that one. It's like, hey, you know, they're not investigating me because of stuff I did. They're just looking for reasons to investigate me. He might say. I don't know. We'll see if that goes somewhere. Let's run through the betting markets real quick. The race is tightening between Trump and Biden. Well, the other people, people besides Trump and Biden, are losing ground. That's what I should say. So, Trump 47, Biden 44, Haley 7, RFK Jr. 5, Gavin Newsom 6, Kamala Harris 3, DeSantis 3. And then who is Donald Trump going to choose for vice president? Tim Scott has increased a whole bunch. I think he recently endorsed Trump. That's the African-American fellow from South Carolina, senator, says he's not gay. Sure seems like he's gay. Anyways, Elise Stefanik, 24, Kristi Noem, 21, Tim Scott, 14, Ramaswamy, 13, Nikki Haley, 7, Kerry Lake, 5, RFK Jr., 4, Henry McMaster, 3. Don't even know who that last guy is. I had one interaction on Spotify this week. Dan said, "Never been so proud to be a white male, aka a white devil, following one of the best shows that gives me a voice." No problem, Dan. Thanks for listening. And for some reason, my listenership is up this week. I don't know. Got to 150. My last few podcasts are getting close to 200 each, which for me is good. It's up by about 50, from about 150 to about 200. Don't know why. Please tell your friends to listen to this podcast if you like it. Let's talk war. You don't hear much about Ukraine, so I think that means Russia's winning. U.S. politicians are still talking about, do they get a asylum, immigration, border deal in exchange for sending money to Ukraine? Well, weapons. Weapons and money. And that's the kind of thing, just talk about when it happens. But the politicians did fund the government for, I'm not sure, maybe for the next year or for some amount of time. A continuing resolution, whatever that amounts to. And what's interesting is maybe they raised the federal budget, I'm making this up, by $36 billion. But in fact, when you account for inflation, that is a decrease in federal spending. So that's kind of crazy. Maybe, you know, the Republicans who want to decrease the size of government, it is true, if you keep it at the same size and there's inflation, then that's like decreasing it. And if you keep it at the same size long enough, then it's almost like you cut it. Who knows? I mean, Republicans only are fiscally responsible when there's divided government, etc. Or not a Republican in the White House. And the Israel-Hamas war, there's nothing really changing with the war itself. That war, that part of the war. But America's fighting the Houthis in Yemen, and Iran is shooting missiles into maybe Iraq, maybe Syria, and Pakistan. And Pakistan's shooting missiles back. So even at this point, it's still just a wait and see. But if it were to escalate into something bigger, this probably is about what it would look like. There was a famous quote where someone asked Obama what keeps him up at night, and he said, "Pakistan having nukes." And, you know, Pakistan is the only Muslim country that has nukes. So I guess even Obama doesn't trust Muslims with nukes. And I don't think Iran and Pakistan are normally mortal enemies. One is Shia, one is Sunni, but I don't know. I did hear why they don't like each other, but I can't remember what it was. Maybe Pakistan was getting into bed with America more, pissing Iran off. Someone said that Iran has a land bridge from themselves all the way to the Mediterranean Sea in Lebanon. So they probably don't want to be encircled, and Pakistan is a big border that they have. And if they're Pakistan's America's friend, then that's starting to encircle them. I guess we wish Israel was the shape of a big donut all around Iran. But instead, they're like a piece of corn next to the mashed potatoes. And then there's been, basically, we're getting ready for, you know, if the whole Middle East doesn't turn into a giant nuclear war or something, we're getting ready for, what do you do after Israel-Hamas war? It should go on for another 6 months, but still. So I'm getting this from some Times of Israel guy, so that's like a pro-Israel newspaper who was on left, right, and center, which is NPR, woke, pro-Palestinian. So anyways, I'm getting this stuff from left, right, and center if you want to know more. But I guess Netanyahu, the leader of Israel, said there ain't going to be no two-state solution after the war. And the possible reason for this is that the Biden administration is like, we're helping you, Israel. We're going to give you all the missiles and all the artillery and all the weapons you need to flatten Gaza. But when it's over, you have to give us something in return. And that's the Palestinians get their own country. And so Netanyahu is preemptively saying, not going to happen. And apparently Netanyahu he's running for prime minister already. He's getting ready for the vote. No one likes him. People on the right don't like him. People on the left never liked him. People on the left never liked him. People on the right don't like him because they can see they're about to get shellacked in the upcoming election. So this is his form of triangulating somehow to try and stay in power, maybe. But Israel's pretty unified. They're not gonna stop the war or something, even if you get a left-wing person in there. But you might get someone in there who wants to give the Palestinians their own country. We're just going to have to wait and see on that. Well, and I guess what the Biden administration is saying is like, we're taking a lot of heat from our left wing supporting Israel. And we got an election coming up, so we need you to give us a two-state solution or something that looks like it, at least up until the election. You know, it looks like we're heading that direction up until the election. Probably don't care if it blows up after that, but we need something to help us get reelected. And Netanyahu would like Biden to lose and get Trump in there. So we shall see. So diversity hiring and DEI has been in the news, or at least people in my bubble have been talking about it. I don't think NBC Nightly News has mentioned the word DEI. Maybe they said the words when the Harvard president got fired. But last week, the anti-woke pop culture YouTubers were talking about the Star Wars director who's Pakistani feminist and chosen for that reason. And Elon Musk was talking about DEI pilots crashing their airplanes out of the air into the ground. And there's been a few airplane mishaps. Not actual crashes, maybe close calls or, you know, something got nicked on the ground. I mean, the airlines are not like, oh, that crash wasn't a diversity hire, but that crash was. So, you know, put on your tinfoil hat and every one of them might have been. But we got no proof. It seems like people think that pilots is the way to go. I mean, the classic jobs where you criticize diversity hiring is surgeon and airline pilot. I mean, you know, you're not waiting for any answer. You just do the rhetorical question. Do you want your airline pilot chosen on the basis of race? And people think that's a slam dunk criticism. The question is any of this breaking through to the normies? We'll probably get some polling on it in the next couple months from right-wing pollsters. Media will ignore. But I want to think about diversity hiring more, and talking on this podcast into my smartphone is how I do my thinking. So the laws on the books, as written, not as enforced, prohibit making hiring decisions based on race, gender, sexuality, maybe sexuality, any of the protected classes, religion. And if some group that you're concerned about isn't listed, you know, on the books as a protected class, then they're not covered. So, you know, specifically political affiliation, you know, right-wingers, left-wingers, Republicans, Democrats, you can discriminate on those things. They're not a protected class. Oh, another one is national origin, which means immigrants. That is a protected class, I believe. So, you know, there's the law, then there's what's good for society. I mean, does it, you know, the meritocracy, if you go by merit, maybe it means that, you know, women of color will never be able to direct Star Wars, Marvel, Disney movies. And I just wonder about the effects on society, like, well, it's called representation. Now, usually people are concerned with it more in front of the camera. Like, for some reason, they've replaced all the redheaded superheroes with superheroes of color. And that's been going on for a while. I mean, it really started going crazy in the last few years. And then it coincided with behind the camera, in particular, like the directors. Basically, the director is the person you blame when a movie is bad and it fails at the box office. But anyways, does society need, you know, each demographic type of person at a high-up job in every industry so that kids can look at that person and say, oh, I could be that person, therefore I'm going to try? Like, the kid wasn't going to try. They were going to not do their homework. They were going to drop out of school. But they see someone that looks like them as a director or an actor or whatever, president. And so, you know, that night they decide to work extra long on their homework and they stay in school and, you know, it makes society better. If it makes society better, then that is a pretty important thing. And it's somewhat of an open question whether or not you need representation to get kids to try hard. I mean, you know, somehow Asians are not looking at Asians in high positions and saying, oh, I'm going to try hard now, but I wasn't otherwise. Like, they're trying hard either way. And Hispanics, they don't seem to be getting like a mega boost, and they don't seem to be trying as hard as the Asians, but they're, you know, they're making stuff happen. It's happening organically, I would say, at least compared to other groups. And you know the story on whites and blacks. So basically, there's a conflict between individual people and groups. Like, half of all white people have a below average IQ. I mean, that's the definition of IQ, or why it's 100. They picked that number to make half of white people under it. And in modern society, IQ is getting pretty damn important for jobs. It's unfortunately correlated with showing up on time for work and impulse control, you know, not shoplifting with your kid and not getting someone pregnant when you're an adult or getting pregnant. So you could make that a protected group. Dumb white people, protected category. But diversity hiring, affirmative action, they're doing kind of a weird thing. It's where you find, I mean, whatever, we're gonna speak bluntly. You find a dumb group, and then you pick the smartest people out of it to lift up. And it works in reverse, like, you know, getting into college, you know, Harvard and Asians. They just got busted in a Supreme Court case discriminating against Asians. And basically, Harvard was like, Asians is a smart group, so we need to discriminate against individual Asians. Someone I was listening to recently said that if you base any decision on the average of a group, then that's racist. I don't know. I mean, dumb people, you could, or dumb white people, that could be a group, but it doesn't have like a historically oppressed part of it too. I mean, I guess you can't help everyone, or we haven't figured out how to do it yet. So dumb white people, you're going to fall through the cracks. You're not going to get special help to get into college. You wouldn't do good if you did get in. That's kind of the problem there. You can't choose the smartest of the dumb white people. You can choose the smartest of the poor white people, but that's something else. And about 25 years ago, the Supreme Court said, in 25 years, affirmative action will no longer be necessary. And I think the Supreme Court thought that the protected classes would all catch up to each other in 25 years. That was probably the trajectory when you graphed it out at the time. And then it hasn't happened. I don't know what you do. I know I don't like the idea of discriminating against individual people. I think that's a human brain thing. It just, you hear a story about someone who got treated unfairly, you just put yourself in their shoes and say, screw that. And then you have to weigh like that little bit of discrimination or that one possibly terrible instance of individual discrimination is going to somehow help a million people a little bit. And the human brain doesn't go, oh, a million people have a tiny little bit of help done to them. I understand that exactly. That makes it all worth it. Just, it's not how the human brain works. I've mentioned that they've done tests where if you tell people about a six-year-old blonde girl who got killed in a car accident, they'll feel more emotions than if you say, oh, a million people got killed in a meteor incident, or something like that. You get the idea. One death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic. And then representation, making a Star Wars movie. Obviously, that does not apply to anyone except for that one person. You know, they're a millionaire now. That doesn't solve poor people's problems across America. I guess a famous example is Connie Chung. Remember her, the TV news reporter? I think she was Chinese-American. I mean, she was on TV news every night on some major network show. She might have even been the host of a nightly, one of the big three nightly newses. Anyways, there were stories I heard that she was on TV and then Asian girls all across America, you know, majored in, I don't know, communications or whatever, television, and became news reporters. So, you know, that representation led to, I mean, just watch your local news and see how many Asian women there are. I mean, there is a lot of them. Anyways, and that's fine. Basically, they worked their butts off and got to where they got. But I guess they wouldn't have got there. They wouldn't even have bothered to go there if it wasn't for Connie Chung. And then one of those redheaded characters that got swapped was the Little Mermaid in that movie last year. And I guess the Hispanic girl who's playing Snow White in the movie this year, sounds like she hates Snow White. But the black girl who played the Little Mermaid, at least to hear her tell it, I mean, what else is she gonna say? But, well, she could say she fucking hates the Little Mermaid. Like, you know, in not so many words, the Snow White girl said. But she said something, and you see this a lot. This is something that anti-woke YouTubers will bring out, quotes like this, where she's like, when I was a kid, my favorite Disney princess was the Little Mermaid. And I used to, you know, dress up like her and think I was the Little Mermaid. And then you'll juxtapose like that kind of clip with another one where she's saying, well, you know, representation is important. This is so that girls today can see that they could be a Disney princess, because otherwise they could never imagine themselves being one. I'm exaggerating on that a little bit, but anyways, you can find clips of, I think her name is Halle Bailey, basically saying those two things. When she was a kid, she didn't care about any protected classes, and she thought she was the Little Mermaid. And also, someone like her needs to play the Little Mermaid, otherwise little girls today could never imagine themselves or enjoy the Little Mermaid. So that's kind of my thoughts so far. It's not fully formed. I wish I could hear smarter people than me talking about it and you know, ideally some statistics to back up whatever position people have. That's not happening. And it seems like if you're woke, which people in power are, then you do what's, I think in Britain they call it positive discrimination. And then you combine that with false accusations of racism against America and groups and individual people. And then you get the George Floyd riots, which has led to the murder of 10,000 extra black people, and the creation of giant DEI departments in universities and corporations all around America. I heard the University of Michigan has 250 people in their DEI department, which, you know, I don't think you can tell the difference between having zero and having 250, except for possibly some false accusations. So, you know, helping out a group every time you can while simultaneously saying you hate that group and you're hurting them. I mean, apparently that's what makes you a good person if you're woke. I don't know. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts said, "The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race." Which sounds good. I'm sure I'll use that credulously at a later date. But that's kind of trying to solve the old problem, you know, of racism, the classic type of racism. That America solved that problem, and then there are still issues, you know, that it didn't close all the gaps. And so I guess, you know, representation is one possible answer. I mean, I guess basically, if you don't allow discrimination whatsoever, you know, and the Supreme Court could probably just about do that, that solves the individual problem, but it doesn't solve the group problem. So I don't know what kind of modern discrimination against whites is the biggest thing that supposedly helps other groups right now. Is it college admissions? Is it employers discriminating? Is it discrimination amongst federal and state employment? I mean, it isn't Hollywood. That's just the obvious, visible example. I don't know the names of any DMV workers, but I can tell you the names of actors. I mean, it's so hard to get a job in Hollywood. It's just, it's a rounding error at best. The amount of people employed in it and doing what they do, it's a rounding error. And then Ivy League and other top universities, that's a much larger chunk of people, but it's not as big as the other two. And I don't know what's bigger. Employers in general, you know, like Fortune 500 in particular, the ones who do it, not your local mom and pop, or government employment. That one, if you don't think that one employs a huge number of people, you're wrong. It does. I don't remember the stats, but it's like maybe 13% of America is black, 26% of federal employees are black. Maybe that's all government jobs. And then Hispanic was something like the reverse, like a quarter of America is Hispanic and like an eighth of the government workers are. Somehow that one ain't working out for them. Or maybe government jobs. You had to get government jobs in the 80s and then waiting for that group to retire. Maybe it's that. And what people always go to is education, but you know, the only one that anything's actually being done on is, you know, various discriminations against Asians in particular in higher ed. And people are like, well, why don't you just, you know, you don't have to discriminate in college admissions if you just fix the pipeline, you know, if you fix grade school, maybe kindergarten, grade school. If you get everyone equal there, then by the time you get to college, you won't have to do nothing. And I've talked about that, evil teachers' unions, military style, school uniforms, blah, blah. But we don't know if we know what to do, we're just not doing it, or if we don't know what to do at all, or if nothing can be done. So that's that's the easy get out of jail free card for people who are like, I don't think you should discriminate in college admissions. I think you should just fix K-12. And it's like, Yeah, that may not even be possible. You're not asking yourselves the hard questions if that's your answer, if that's all it is. You're like, oh, it's easy, just fix K-12. Yeah, buddy. Now, what do pro-DEI people say? I went and listened to an episode of A Half Hour of Heterodoxy. It's a podcast that ended, I don't know, a few years ago. But they did an episode where they had a couple diversity scholars from Harvard on, and I think it was recorded before George Floyd. It probably way different after Summer of Love. But if you take what does diversity mean in a corporation? At least back then, it meant taking diversity classes, and the class would mostly be about unconscious bias. And I went and took an unconscious bias test online to remind myself. I've mentioned it before, but the way it worked is it has black faces and white faces, and then it has good words and bad words, like joy, hopeful, painful, terrible. And this one's on your phone, so you know, they'll be like, on the left will be good words and on the right will be bad words, and then they'll show you a word and you'll have to click left or right. And then they'll say on the left will be white faces and on the right will be black faces. And then they'll show you faces and you have to click left or right. And then they'll be like, on the left is white faces and bad words, and on the right is black faces and good words. You can see now I'm having to think. Anyways, and then eventually the last one is white faces and good words, black faces and bad words. And like until the end, well, you know, so the penultimate one where it's white and bad words, in my mind I'm going white bad, you know, it'll show a white face, I'm like white bad left, and then it'll show the word pain and I'll be like white bad left, and then it'll show a black face and I'll be like black good right, and then it'll say something like the word joyful and I'll say black good right, and then the ultimate one is where you do white faces and good words, black faces and bad words, and so you keep going, you know, it's like white face, white good left. Word terrible, white good right. Actually, no, you see the word terrible, you go black bad right. Anyways, I guess what the one thing I want to say is black and bad, just those two words are easier to say. It's easier to say black bad, like black bad. They both start with B's and they're both short. I guess they're all one syllable. I don't know. I just feel like easier words. They're just easier words for some reason. I mean, white, you know, W-H, it's just not that easy. And white good, anyways. I imagine they've done other tests where it's like, instead of black and bad, they should do like black and, I don't know, terrible. And maybe white and wonderful, and then see how that goes. Oh, white, wonderful, W-W. Anyways, go look up, what is it? Implicit association test. Look that up. Implicit Association Test, Harvard. Have fun with it. You can do it on your phone. Well, and the whole thing, they're measuring how long it takes you to choose, and it's in milliseconds or something. And just talking about this podcast, I can hear myself pausing, trying to... I mean, either way, let's see. White, bad. White, good. You know, you have to think about it. Long story short, I had a slightly longer reaction time to put black and good together than white and good. But these Harvard scholars were saying that this does nothing. Teaching people about unconscious bias or implicit association, blah, blah, doesn't change anything at a corporation. I mean, the way that you have diversity at a corporation, according to them, is how many black people you have in high positions. Like, that's it. That's, you know, if something works, if you get more black people in high positions. And you know if something doesn't do shit if you don't get that. And so these mandatory classes where they teach you about your unconscious bias actually lead to less diversity in high positions at corporations. I guess people don't like being made to take the classes. It annoys them. Possibly people go, oh, it's an unconscious bias. There's nothing that can be done about it. I can just move on. I mean, that's their speculation. I don't know if that's true. But so that's the standard thing that corporations all across America are doing, these mandatory implicit bias, diversity, equity, inclusion classes. Where does that come from? It comes from Google, 2010. And apparently Facebook jumped on board maybe 2011. And so corporations across America are like, Google and Facebook, you know, at that time, they were the richest, best, mostest everythingest corporations in America, and so it's like, well, you know, they should know, they got the smartest people, they're hiring everyone from Stanford and Harvard, they should know what they're doing. And so that's what America did for, I guess, the 2010s. They just copied them and doing a thing that doesn't work at all. And this podcast, they just, it's almost all them saying that what corporations are doing doesn't work. Basically, it's complaining. It's talking about the negative problem. You know, maybe implying racism. They don't say it exactly. And I'm like, well, what does work? You know, you are the Harvard people in charge of this crap. What works? Anyways, at the end, they mention a couple things that they think work. So one of them they think that works is go to historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs. Go to HBCUs and hire your workers, Google, instead of going to the Ivy League universities. And that sounds like a quota to me. Like, basically, get yourself a group of people that is only black people, and then choose your workers from amongst that group. I mean, that would work. That would work pretty damn good. And last week I mentioned Elon Musk replied to a Twitter comment saying that the SAT scores at HBCUs is not very high. So I went and looked it up. I'm not going to go into it too much. The answer is the SAT scores at HBCUs are, as far as college SAT scores go, terrible. Like, compared to Ivy League SAT scores, it's just night and day. You know, basically, 50th percentile of American SAT scores versus 99th percentile, 98th. Man, probably 99th. So I don't know. I don't know if that will work. Going to HBCUs and hiring from there, I mean, I don't know. I didn't go look up the majors. Are HBCUs pumping out electrical engineers? I don't know. Somehow I think they're not. So now it's like, go to HBCUs and hire people with the wrong major to be your engineers. That ain't gonna work. And then the other thing they said that work is, this is interesting, a company needs a DEI department. They need a DEI department that every month talks to senior management and goes over the numbers of how diverse, you know, every department in the corporation is and whether or not it's more diverse than it was last month. Senior management needs to be getting the numbers on diversity in front of their faces constantly, basically. And I imagine that would work. You would, senior management would want to do something. You know, you don't want to get harangued at. You know, you've hired this person. You know, you're in charge. You are the person that gets to yell at everyone, and no one ever gets to yell at you, except for this one diversity person you hired who gets to yell at you. And you're like, oh, God, I don't want to get yelled at again this month. And so I don't know. What I imagine is that they're going to be like, fine, lower the standards. Here's a quota, just whatever. That's how diverse this department was last month. Manager, go hire someone who makes that number go up. Number go up, as they say. And basically, you kick it down the line. You know, you get your subordinate to give it to their subordinate until someone is like, fine, I'll just discriminate. I'll just discriminate on the basis of race and hire someone who's unqualified. Well, I don't know. That's my guess is what the reason why diversity departments work is because it makes people discriminate. But maybe it works for some other reason. They don't say why it works, but it does work. So there you go. It does work. They do work. That's interesting. And then they say that I've heard from someone in the know that diverse groups do not accomplish goals better than homogenous groups. But one of these guys says there's no evidence that homogenous groups perform tasks better, which is different from saying homogenous groups, you know, succeed less in completing tasks. But I'm gonna go from what I used to believe to saying the jury is out and I want to hear more on that one. Well, and they were talking about that because this is what happens when you go to the CEO of a company that's just making money hand over fist. And you're like, you need to change everything for diversity's sake. Apparently the CEO is like, we're choosing people based on talent and the meritocracy, and this company is succeeding wildly. Why would I change anything? And I guess that's when you need to go, hey, maybe it would succeed even more. Take a chance. Take a flyer. If the New York Times doesn't report on it, then it didn't happen. And this week they have a podcast on the Daily talking about how we should bring the SAT back. And last week I said that 80% of colleges had stopped using the SAT because, you know, never waste a crisis. SATs were canceled for 1 year because of COVID. And then apparently colleges all across America were like, they're racist, let's keep them canceled. And then some colleges have already brought them back. So the 80% number I got from the podcast, The Morning Wire. And that's the 15-minute morning news roundup from the Daily Wire, right-wing outlet. And I think mainstream media outlets are listening to the Morning Wire. They're getting their news from the Morning Wire, putting some woke spin bullshit on it, and then making it their news. Like an episode of the Gist podcast this week. I was listening to it. It's Mike Pesca. He used to be a big guy at NPR. Now he's on his own, but it's a big dog, famous podcast. He used to be part of Slate. Very big mainstream media. Anyways, he's talking about whether or not DEI caused that Boeing airplane to get a hole in it while it was flying. And he plays a clip. And I'm like, I know that voice. Whose voice is that? I can't think of whose voice that was. It was the people from the Morning Wire. And it was funny. I mean, Mike is pretty honest. I mean, he used it to just say that everyone thinks DEI caused that airplane to fall apart and they're all stupid. But the clip from the Morning Wire was them going, well, we know it wasn't DEI that caused this hole in the airplane. And then he's like, see, right-wingers everywhere think that DEI caused the hole in the airplane. But the New York Times, The Daily, they're talking about the war on the SAT. And basically they're saying, we need to bring it back. You think the SAT stops black kids from getting into college? Well, go and buy extracurriculars and, you know, music classes. That's even worse. And so it's a lady interviewing a man, and she's like, well, why do black kids get such bad scores on SATs? And I'm listening, and I'm like, yeah, why? And he goes, well, just think about it. And I'm like, I'm thinking about it. And then America's racist. Makes me think I was talking to a buddy, not my woke buddy, about masks. And I think I was, you know, back when people gave a damn about that stuff. And it was like studies in general. They didn't show that masks don't work. You can't prove a negative. They just, studies failed to show that masks worked for COVID transmission. And my buddy was pro-mask, and it was like, well, why do you think they work? And he was like, well, just think about it. COVID is coming out of your mouth. A mask covers your mouth. Boom. So anyone, no one is calling for double-blind, peer-reviewed, you know, super thorough tests to double check the things where they just go, oh, I thought about it. All I have to do is think about it in my head. I can run the test in my head and come back with the answer, masks work and America's racist. It's called science. But the guy said something interesting. He brought up the NAEP test. Have you ever heard of the nape of your neck? It's a word, N-A-P-E. It's the only part of your neck that has a special name for it. I think it's the part that's above your clavicle and below your Adam's apple if you're a trans woman. But people will say the SAT is biased. So that's the question. Is it biased? If it's biased against black people, then you got to throw it out. But is it biased? Well, the NAEP test, it's usually called, when you hear about it in the news, it's called America's Report Card. And apparently in different states call it different things. But it's a national test done at some point in grade school for all kids. And then schools are deemed failing or, you know, a good school, bad school. I don't know. Anyways, it's how you judge schools. But kids who do good on the NAEP do good on the SAT. Therefore, it isn't rich kids paying for test prep because no one's paying for test prep for their little kid for the NAEP. And yet they're still doing phenomenally well. Makes me think there's some Scandinavian country where your last name, like, you know, whatever, their history goes back a long ways and you can look up stuff or I don't know what. They know a lot about this country because they know the history of the country. I don't know if Sweden, you know, Norway, I don't know. But people's last names showed how high in the nobility their ancestors were. You know, one of the countries, all their names either end in son or daughter. It'd be like Jorgensen or Brogendaughter. But I think whichever country that is, it was another one of those countries. And basically, you could say, okay, were their ancestors in the nobility 10 generations ago? Well, you can predict that they will have a high IQ today. Which means that the nobility back then had a high IQ also. And basically, IQ and nobility are highly correlated. Or else, Scandinavia is racist. Let me play a little clip from the New York Times podcast that made me laugh.
A system that uses SATs has the potential to give grist to those conservative critics. They can say, hey, wait a minute. Why did you admit this kid of one race who has a 1400 mm-hmm. when you rejected this kid of another race with a 1500?
You see what they did there when they were making up whatever numbers they wanted? Like they're talking about the Supreme Court and conservatives and affirmative action. He could have been like, you know, what's wrong with letting in a black kid who has a 1401 on the SAT just because the Asian got a 1402? I mean, if you're making up numbers, you want to make them close. I guess he didn't want to make them too close. You want to make them, the closer the better, the more it sounds good. I forget, like the real gap black to Asian is something like 1120 to 1540. If you put that into percentiles, it's like maybe 65 to 99.5. What'd you get on the test? Oh, a 65. What did you get on the test? A 99.5. And I think Asians with 99s are being not let into Harvard as we speak. And to be fair, rich white people with 99s are getting in every time. I mean, who do you want to hang out with? One of those people could probably take you on a skiing trip to Jackson Hole and there'll be a helicopter involved. And the other one will have Ogre rush in and go, nerd! Well, they don't mention that the top colleges steal their diversity from the colleges below them. But they do mention the colleges who have brought back the SAT this year. And it is the absolute top private schools and the absolute top public schools. So I didn't know that part. That was interesting. Probably means like UCLA or Michigan, Virginia, University of Texas. But they say that colleges are scared because the Supreme Court made that ruling. No one really knows what it means. So one way to get around the ruling is just get rid of the SAT. And then let the top universities see if they can figure out a way around the ruling. How to bring race back into the equation and not get the pantsuit off them. And the podcast did answer a question I've been having, which I guess the answer was obvious. But if you get rid of the SAT, what do you go by? I mean, I know that you go by extracurriculars, which helps rich people who, you know, go to Africa and build wells or whatever. And you can look at their essay, but, you know, that's just, you know, who hired the best essay writer to write the essay for their kid? Basically, on and on. There's all these problems with how do you choose when you don't have this test with just a straight up number you can look at. This one's higher than that number. And they answered my question, and the answer is, you just guess. There's no way to know. You have no clue. You might let in someone who's going to drop out. You might let someone in who's going to do great. You have no idea. You just have to guess. You can either go by merit, or you can just guess. I didn't plan on talking about DEI for as long as I have. I was like, this is too long a segment. Then I was like, oh, no. Turn that on its head. This is a special episode. This is a very special episode about DEI. One of the episodes this week from the Federalist Radio Hour is about DEI. And they have a guy from the Alliance Defending Freedom on. This guy's a lawyer. He's been working for this alliance for 20 years. And he said 20 years ago, he'd be taking K-12 schools to court because they wouldn't allow a Bible study club alongside their chess clubs, basically defending religious freedom. But now they defend free speech alongside religious liberty. And I don't know, I don't know exactly what he does. You know, they focus on big tech and the financial corporations that control all the other corporations and make them woke, you know, ESG and DEI. So one thing they do, they've created a viewpoint diversity score for corporations. So we'll see if that does anything. I mean, the first step to overcoming a problem is admitting you have one, or at least shining a light on it in this case. What I wonder is if it's a nonprofit of some sort. So I wonder if their donations are like through the roof now that they're fighting DEI. This is like the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center. Like, way back in the day, they were doing good stuff. Like, one of them was defending free speech, the other one was getting wrongly convicted people out of prison. And then that's not what the donors wanted. And especially when Trump got elected, the donors were like, what we want is lies about how America's racist. And they're like, and we'll give you a lot of money. And they're like, money talks. And the ACLU became against free speech. I mean, pretty crazy. And they're an old school organization that you wouldn't have thought could be flipped. But I think like the ACLU is already making noises about going back. And so I'm a civil rights activist. I fight for equality for people of all races. And of course, you have to remind people, in America today, whites are the major group that's being discriminated against. And so I'm this millennia's Martin Luther King, but really, I only have 100, maybe a few hundred people listening to my podcast, which is the way I fight for equality. So maybe I'm more like just one of the people in the civil rights march that got nibbled on by a German shepherd. But I'm aiming high to be the new MLK. But I wonder if this is going to be the fastest civil rights movement in the history of the planet. I mean, America went from discriminating against blacks more to whites more, you know, maybe around the year 2000. And it really didn't get like super crazy until 2020. So, I mean, you know, if you take 2020 as your starting point, I mean, I think we're going to have this thing licked, I don't know, in 5 years. It's like, don't bring an MLK knife to an anti-woke podcast gunfight. And after whites and men achieve equality, will they be fighting it over for decades afterwards when they already won? I don't know. I might have mentioned this already, but I was listening to a BBC science podcast the other week, and like the headline was, is time going faster? And whether or not history is going faster is something I'm very interested in. Is it actually going faster, or just the internet allows you to be plugged in so it seems faster? And unfortunately, that BBC podcast was about the day. Like, the amount of time it takes the Earth to go around the sun was decreasing by a millisecond or something every day. Anyways, that was not what I wanted to hear about. Although it did contradict, like, all the scientific models before they could check it, so they're back to the drawing board. So much stuff in science is the opposite of what scientists think. But I feel like history is moving faster. I mean, DEI came in, swept across every school and corporation and government agency, and now it's already on its way out. And it was huge. I mean, that's a huge thing to come and go. And DEI, I mean, just like affirmative action, has always been just on the, you know, facially illegal based on the Civil Rights Act or the 14th Amendment. Basically, any law that they wrote to give blacks equality, just the way they wrote those laws, they made equality for everyone. What is that? Based on textualism, not originalism. Reminder for myself. Textualism is what does the law say, the letters right there in front of you on the piece of paper. Originalism, what did the lawmakers intend when they were doing it? And you can go read other stuff that they wrote around the same time period. And then, you know, like, is Donald Trump, like, Donald Trump seems to be the impetus for a lot of things moving faster. And then there was like COVID and, you know, Black Lives Matter. Is that partly because of COVID, because of Donald Trump, or is that because of everyone has a movie studio in their pocket and they can film cops doing whatever? I think all of the above. But just imagine if Hillary had won. She would have put in a bunch of Supreme Court justices who said, you know, do the opposite of what the Constitution says. That part that says don't discriminate means go out and discriminate like hell. Is that history moving faster? And oh my God, it was, you know, history's on a knife's edge and it could go either way, like a raindrop on the Rocky Mountains heading to the Atlantic or the Pacific. What is that? The Great Something Divide? Well, and the summary of the podcast is that schools can have excellence or they can have diversity. And they're kind of like and you can't have both. But then they're like, but of course you can have both. Just think it through. But I'm going to give the real summary. COVID was the crisis that let universities implement the Black Lives Matter policies, and it turns out a few years later, America's over it. And just like you can't reform the police because they're not racist to begin with, there's not anything the universities can do, and they're just going to go back to their same old, with any possible changes coming from that Supreme Court ruling. And because of grade inflation, you can't go by kids' GPAs anymore. There's too many of them getting straight A's, doesn't tell you anything. So, SAT. Now you know if someone's going to succeed in school or not. It's the best judge. And then he mentions that MIT has brought back the SAT, and they still have a diverse group of students, or this year. This year they brought it back, and this year is diverse. 30% diverse. That includes Hispanics. And he's like, so see, if you use the SAT plus some other criteria, you can have a diverse class. It's like, when they say, and some other criteria, that's what they always call it. That's what they called it. That's what affirmative action is called. They have to call it that. That was a legal thing from the Supreme Court. They're like, here are the words to say. We use race as one of many factors. Those are the magic words. But MIT is like a block away from Harvard. I think if you're a student at MIT, you can take classes at Harvard. If you're a student at Harvard, you can take classes at MIT. It's basically like their STEM thing. That's how badass Harvard is. They've got MIT. You can move some of the Asians over to MIT and the rich white girls can learn about interior design. But it works for the absolute top colleges. I mean, basically they're saying for the number one, best college that people want to go to in America, everything's fine. And that's because, the number one college goes and steals the kids that would have gone to the numbers two, three, and four college. It's like, oh, there's not enough, high SAT, good at math black kids. Well, I'll just, Harvard's like, I'll just take them from Brown and Princeton and Yale. Sorry, you guys are going to have to go. And then, Brown is like, oh, well, we're going to have to go take our kids from the ones that would have gone to the University of Texas. And the University of Texas is like, oh, actually, we can steal from someone. And then that college, that's Texas A&M. And they're like, oh, we got to steal the kids from community college. This ain't working. There you go. We took the best kids from community college. And now community college doesn't have any good kids left. And the anti-woke Disney shareholders who have been trying to take over the board of directors, they got rejected for putting people on the board. And so now they're taking it to the shareholders for a general vote. And I don't know when that happens, but we shall see. I mean, Vanguard and BlackRock are the biggest shareholders. I don't think they will vote for anti-woke stuff. I mean, they forced a lot of companies to be woke in the first place, but they can change their mind. And I was watching the Film Threat YouTube channel, and they've got a ongoing thing about the downfall of Disney. And so they were talking about John Lasseter. This is the guy who is the head of Pixar through all of the highest highs, back when Pixar could do no wrong. And he got Me Too'd. He didn't do anything exactly sexual, but he was known for getting drunk and giving out hugs at company events. And then there was, this is in 2018, there was a movement that if we could get rid of that guy, we can put women in charge and people of color. And so they used these drunken hug fests to, they basically implied that it was sexual and he has to go. And so he was fired. And the movie they were making at the time was Raya and the Last Dragon. I mean, I think it got released on Disney Plus. It happened during the pandemic, so it didn't go to the theaters. You may not have even heard of it. But anyways, that was the Pixar movie. Maybe this isn't Pixar. I think this is Disney Animation. Yeah, I think it's Disney Animation. Whatever. It's one of the animation departments at Disney. John Lasseter. And so they pushed him out, and they decided that the movie needed to be made by 50% women. And so they pushed a bunch of other people out, and all of Disney's things were just, they were never fail hit factories. And then it's hard to find talented people. It turns out there isn't a whole bunch of super talented women sitting on the sidelines because people are racist against women and won't give them a chance. It's a bunch of people who, it looks like, don't know what they're doing. Anyways, they brought in women and took over the whole thing. And it's been flop after flop for Disney ever since. I do want to say, you know, let's steel man this a little bit. I looked up, what percentage of Hollywood movies are flops? Well, the answer is 60%. 40% of studio movies make money. When you say movies in general, it's like, I think 80% of them are flops. But that's not how Disney was. Disney, with their Marvel movies, with their Star Wars movies, with their Pixar and their Walt Disney Studios animation, they were hitting way over 40% making money. So you can't say they got woke and went broke, because they really haven't had any good hits since that period where things got shooken up. And where do they get all these women when there just isn't any qualified people out there? Well, there was an organization in Hollywood called WIA, Women in Animation. And I think it was a nobody cares nothing organization. But Disney needed a bunch of women, and so they went to them and, who knows, had a mailing list or something. And they basically put, you know, WIA in charge of huge parts of Disney. And those people are still there producing flops as we speak. So you're going to have to do a reverse of that to fix Disney. You're going to have to fire people, tons of people. And they're all going to be women, and a ton of them are going to be people of color. Which means you can't fire him without looking like a racist. So that's going to be fun to watch Disney try and deal with that. The trial against Alec Baldwin for shooting a cinematographer on a movie set is going forward. And that happened a couple years ago, and it became a anti-woke cause celeb on YouTube. I think because Baldwin played Trump on SNL and had major Trump derangement syndrome and spoke out against guns, and then there he was killing someone with a gun. But I'm going to play you an old episode that covered the situation. The new situation is, it's going to trial. We don't really know much more than I said 2 years ago. Twitter handle, @religionofwoke. Please give me 5 stars on Apple. Is Alec Baldwin going down for involuntary manslaughter? We don't know, but the way that people can get killed on movie sets is pretty crazy. So that's the second half of this podcast. Today on the Anti-Woke Podcast. So, the Alec Baldwin situation is pretty interesting. There's a movie they were making called Rust in New Mexico. And Alec Baldwin, it's a cowboy movie. And Alec Baldwin shot a 42-year-old cinematographer. What was her name? She's pretty cute. I don't know. I'm a bad man. I can't remember her name or the armorer girl's name, but they're both cute. I think in Hollywood they hire you based on your looks, which may not lead to the best results. But in any case, so making a cowboy movie, Alec Baldwin shoots and kills the cinematographer, and I guess the bullet or something. So we don't know. I'm talking about this now. We still don't know. I was gonna wait for the information to all come out, but I'll just say what we know for now. So there was a gun. There was something coming out of a gun. A 42-year-old cinematographer was killed, and whatever came out of that gun went through her and also hit the director. And he was taken to the hospital and released. He was okay. So, just a couple other facts that, you know, don't tell you anything about exactly what's going on. But there's a bunch of union workers, you know, I guess high-paid union workers, on the set, and they had recently walked off. And said, whatever, they didn't like the situation. And so maybe that plays into it, or maybe it doesn't. And then, apparently there's a position called armorer, who is the person who takes care of guns on a movie set. And so the armorer was a 24-year-old female. I guess her dad was a famous movie armorer, and he taught her... whatever, and then she was getting jobs on movies, and she'd done a podcast, I think, a few months earlier, where she had said that she didn't feel like she knew what she was doing, maybe regarding blanks and guns or something. Anyway, so 24-year-old armor. I'll tell you what, you look her up. She's hot. And I don't know, Instagram or whatnot. Like, she has like pictures where she's just like covering her breasts with her long hair and taking pictures and putting it online. So she's interesting. See, I don't just tell you the news. I tell you the interesting stuff related to the news. And then apparently they had like a cart, or anyways, they had a location where the guns were kept on the set. I guess I should say, there's a lot of rules about having guns on sets because people have gotten killed by guns. You know, actors and whatnot have gotten killed by guns, and I'll talk about that later. But anyway, so I guess the guns were kept on a cart or some other designated area. And I think the armorer is supposed to be in charge of them. And I haven't heard exactly what she did, you know, other than there was a cart and an armorer existed on this set. We don't know about that. But then there was an assistant director who was also part of the chain of custody to make sure that no one got hurt by the guns. And apparently he handed a gun to Alec Baldwin and he said, "The gun is cold." So, like, that means it's safe. That means it can't, you know, probably means it doesn't have blanks in it, because blanks can kill. There's been instances of people killing themselves with blanks, even though there's no bullet in there. And so anyways, apparently he said the gun is cold. And then Alec Baldwin, this part is a little iffy, but I heard maybe he was like pulling the gun out of his holster for, you know, some movie scene. And he did it two times. And the second time was when the cinematographer was killed. And I think that part is very easily likely to change. Like, the very first day, like within hours of it, people were saying that Alec Baldwin was pissed off at the long hours. And they're like, "We got to do another shoot." You know, like, whatever. It's late at night and we got to do another shoot. And he's like, he didn't want to do another shoot. And so he's like, you want another shoot? I'm going to shoot. And so, you know, he's joking around with the gun. Anyways, that turned out not to be true. But there's a lot of, whatever, people just don't know. People don't know, and then some people like to jump in there and say stuff. Like the union guys, like, whatever. So they were interviewing, like, a union, whatever, armorer, I guess, or just, anyways, some sort of union guy. And he made the rounds, and anyone who wanted to interview him, he would answer. And he's like, "Oh, this is all because, you know, scabs, non-union people working." So, you know, there's motives, and there's information that ain't correct or not corroborated, or we don't know yet. And I've been watching some lawyers on YouTube, and they're saying that maybe the actor has a responsibility. Like, you know, it ain't murder. No one's saying it's murder. But the actor has a responsibility to, you know, like, look at the gun. Maybe, you know, if it's a revolver, you break it, you know, you, whatever. There's a little thing where you can break it, kind of, you can fold it open. That's how you load it. You fold it open to load it. And so if you're an actor, you have, and you think you got a gun that has nothing in it, it's still your responsibility to break it open and make, you know, and confirm everything. And so, you know, whatever, that's a legal question. We will see later on. I mean, Alec Baldwin's got tons of money, so we'll see. And this ain't me, but anyway, some people are doing, some people on YouTube who are on the right are just saying some uncharitable stuff. Basically that Alec Baldwin, apparently he opposes gun rights. He does not think that Americans should have guns. And so there's a little bit of a dance, you know, a little bit of a schadenfreude. People are a little bit happy that here's this guy who's, you know, super outspoken and hates guns. Whatever, got himself in this situation. And I will say, you know, like, if Alec Baldwin loved guns, he'd probably know a lot more about guns, you know, if he's always going out and shooting them. Maybe he wouldn't have this problem. Although, who knows? That's just speculation. So that's all fine. That's whatever. You probably already heard that part. Now, here's the interesting story. Here, I'm going to give you the information that you don't know, which is what happened to Brandon Lee in 1993 when he was filming The Crow. Brandon Lee was the son of Bruce Lee. And The Crow, it was a good movie. Good movie from the early 90s. And Brandon Lee got shot and killed on the set. Now, how does this happen? You know, what happened? So in this movie, there's some, you know, villain, and the villain has a 44 Smith & Wesson. Basically, it's the same gun that Clint Eastwood had in Dirty Harry. So a revolver, 44 Magnum revolver. And depending on what's going on in the scene, you have to put different things into the chambers, the six chambers in the part that revolves. So let's go over quickly the parts of a shell, like a bullet. You can call the whole thing a bullet, but the bullet is really just that little lead part that goes flying out. So you got the shell casing, you got the primer, that's the thing that the hammer hits and sets off. You got the gunpowder, that's what's set off by the primer. And then you got the bullet. And so it just goes, where you got shell, primer, gunpowder, bullet, and then the bullet goes flying out the front. You know, when you do stuff correctly. But so they're making this movie, and, you know, obviously they're not using real live, you know, normal bullets that you buy in the store that you can kill a bear with or whatever. They got special ones to try and make it safe. And so they got two kinds. They got blanks, which is, a blank is just, you got all of it except for the bullet. And people have been killed by blanks because a blank, no bullet flies out, but it's like a force, a pressure wave, you know, kind of like a little bomb or whatever, comes out the front. There was a famous instance where an actor held a gun to his head, which had a blank in it, and he pulled the trigger and he died. So, you know, no metal thing went into his skull, but the shock wave killed him. So blanks can kill. You know, you wouldn't want to hold a blank up to your toe and pull the trigger. You might be missing a toe. But on the other hand, if you're 10 feet in front of a gun that has a blank in it and it's shot at you, well, it won't hurt you. I mean, it might hurt your ears. It will hurt your ears. You want to protect your ears, but it won't send a piece of metal out and kill you. So they had blanks on the set of The Crow, and then they had another kind of bullet. So basically, when you got a revolver, like when you're, you know, when someone is pointing a revolver at you, you can kind of see if it's loaded. You can at least see some of the chambers. And if they're, you know, you can see if they're empty or if there's a bullet in them. So on a movie set, you can't just have a revolver with nothing in it, nothing in the chambers, because then when the camera is looking that certain angle, it looks like it's empty. So then what they do is they create shells that don't have the gunpowder. Now, this part I don't know on the set of The Crow, whether or not it had the primer and didn't have the gunpowder, or if it didn't have the primer and it didn't have the gunpowder. Like, you know, that would be the safe. The safe way would be no primer and no gunpowder, because the primer, it ain't going to shoot the bullet out fast like normal, but it is a little thing that's explosive, and so, you know, it's just not safe. Not that safe. But in any case, so they were doing a scene where the camera is looking at the gun, and so they have these bullet, you know, these shells, I want to call them bullets too. They have these shells in there that show you the bullet, but they're, you know, they're not real ones. And somehow, one of the bullets got into the barrel. And so, like, you know, like if you have the primer, but no gunpowder, and then the bullet, and you pull the trigger, well, that primer would probably push the bullet into the barrel, just a little ways, right? It wouldn't go all the way out. It would just go in there a little ways, and then it'd be lodged there. That's something you should know, is that bullets are made to not, they're made too big to go down a barrel. Like, the point is, the barrel has something called rifling, which is grooves. It has grooves in it, and the grooves cut into the bullet. So you want the bullet to fit in there real tight, and then it gets cut into the perfect shape as it heads out the barrel. So, like, they don't fall out easily. They get lodged. You know, they don't fall out, they get lodged in there. So either the bullet, like, just fell out of the shell and got lodged in the barrel, or maybe they had a primer in there that, you know, you pull that and that lodged it in there. I mean, that sounds crazy to me, because if you hit the primer, it's loud. It's going to be louder than a cap gun, or probably, you know, at least as loud as a cap gun. So people should be like, oh, wait, what was that sound? We should double check it. So anyways, I've not heard the answer on this. I think maybe it's unknown. They didn't prosecute anyone. There was no court case, at least that I know of. But somehow, a bullet got lodged in the barrel. And so the next scene, or whatever, sometime later, they were shooting another scene where that gun was shot at Brandon Lee, He's playing The Crow. It's like a superhero. He's playing like a superhero. And so they put blanks in it. So, you know, that shouldn't hurt the person that you're pointing it at, but it, you know, it makes the gun makes a puff of smoke and whatnot, makes it look real. But so what happened was there was a blank shot, and a blank is just, you know, a shell without the bullet. But if there's a bullet in the barrel, then the blank will force the bullet out with, you know, just like normal. And he got shot in the gut. I was listening to this, and he's like, oh, he got shot in the gut. I'm like, oh, why did he die? It went through his gut, hit him in the spine, and he died. So anyways, there's one way where it's kind of complicated, and you got to keep track of exactly what's going on with the guns and, you know, and the different types of shells that you put in them. I guess one other thing to know is people are calling it a prop gun. So a prop on a movie set is like anything. Like, I'm making a movie about people digging ditches. Well, then you go to the store, you buy some shovels, and you bring them over there, and now they're props. You know, it doesn't mean it's not a real shovel. So anyways, a prop gun can be like some fake kind of gun, airsoft gun that looks real or whatever, or it can just be the real deal, still a prop. So I've seen some people on YouTube say that, you know, there's no excuse for Alec Baldwin, like he should be checking the gun. Like, you know, when you take a gun to the range, you are in charge of that gun and you need to check it and, you know, make sure it's pointed in a safe direction and all the other gun rules. Keep your finger off the trigger, etc. But if you're on a movie set and they have to make the revolver look like it's loaded for a scene, then I don't really see how you can check it. You're almost, you know, you could go watch the person put the fake bullets or whatever in the gun and then watch the gun taken to wherever and stored wherever and keep it under lock and key. And anyway, so Alec Baldwin almost would have had to just stand there and watch the people who are handling the gun, because otherwise, by the time it's handed to him, there's no way for him to know. Or at least, depending on the situation, there may be no other way for him to have known what he had other than to watch them, like, make it. And I say make it because I'm not sure what kind of revolver it was, but a lot of the old, the ones that look... A lot of the old cowboy guns were black powder guns. So you didn't actually put in a bullet, you know, a shell casing with a bullet, you know, like the copper, the thing that every modern gun shoots, basically. And I'll talk about that in the next section. But if it's black powder, or maybe the last section, but anyways, if it's black powder, then that means you pour in powder or you don't pour in powder, and then you put a piece of cloth over that, forget what that's called, and then you put in the lead ball. Anyways, basically you're making the bullet out of the parts inside the gun itself. And I think, like, I'm not even sure if you handed me a gun if I'd be able to look at it and say exactly what was going on. Like, I'm not sure. I think maybe you couldn't tell. Basically, you can't tell by looking at it, maybe. Anyways, basically, it could be quite complicated, and it may not be easy to point the finger at whoever, or it's going to take a while till we can point that finger correctly. Well, that's the end of the podcast. There's some links in the description, and thanks for listening.